You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 28 May. We've got Dell results ahead of U.S. market open this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Petli Radin has Herenia Capital Advisors. The Mag 7, I mean, the basket's up at the all-time highs. I mean, bits and pieces, some of them doing better than others. I want to get his sense around how he's thinking about these. Certainly, we came into the year and everyone was like, oh, they're pricey. Sure, but in many cases, they're just pricier. We're going to be chatting with Vishal Rama from Prescient Investment Management. We've got MPC this afternoon. Consensus is we're going to get a hike. That seems painful. And then we're going to chat with Workman's attorneys. Changes to mergers and acquisitions, the regulations that perhaps could see an improved process. We'll get her view on that. This podcast is brought to you by Stand Up Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Joburg's 97 billion rand budget, higher tariffs amid intensified revenue drive, include plans to increase electricity prices, property rates and refuse removal charges. Business Day, take-home salaries shrink to a two-year low as inflation and war bite. Debt burden grows heavier as real salaries hit lowest point in 2 years. Morning markets, the US was mixed, but the S&P was green but 0.02% higher. Nasdaq was off 0.1%. The East is all red. Sydney, 1% lower. Tokyo, 1.1% lower. Hong Kong, just over 2% down. And Tencent, just over 2.5% down. Commodities, all red. Gold futures, $4,403. Brent, $97.12. Platinum, $1,895. Palladium, $1,388. The Rand is $16.48. Bitcoin, $73,300. And top 40 opening call, red open, 810 points, or 0.75% lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Petli Radin. You find him, of course, Herenia Capital Advisors. Petli, appreciate the early morning time. Mag 7, Alphabet, Nvidia, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, Meta, and Tesla. I mean, looking at their returns year to date, some are green, some Meta's a little down. Microsoft off 14%, Tesla down 2% for the year. Some green there across most of them. How are you looking at it? I mean, the basket of these shares is essentially trading at all-time highs, notwithstanding all the worries we came into the year saying, oh, these stocks are expensive. They carry on going.
They keep getting – well, they're magnificent, Simon.
Good answer.
look, I don't know. We're not big chasers of fads. We understand that these things have been doing really well, and there's a lot of momentum in them, and there's a lot of, you know, faith in their ability to continue to grow earnings. We just can't see how Tesla and Facebook and these Nvidia, like, yes, they're great businesses, but, man, are they going to keep growing at the pace they're growing? Is it really realistic for them to do that? We like to buy the beaten down dogs, right?
Yeah.
So we look
at
companies that are valuable, undervalued, and we would like to buy some of them. So we have some tech stuff. We own PayPal, for example.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
We've got a company called Workday.
Yep.
So it's not necessarily that we completely avoid the new and shiny sector, if you will. But we think that there's more value for us to be found currently in the software space rather than in the AI space. And I think of what a lot of the Magnificent Seven have done is they've all some way, shape, or form introduced the words AI into what they're doing. Right. I mean, even Tesla with the self-driving and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. It's very cool. We think that Tesla is a great business. I'm very interested to see what the market's going to do with SpaceX. Honestly, I saw something that it's over $1 trillion valuation on like 35 billion revenue, where other companies like Nvidia, for example, have, you know, similar valuations, but actually have 700 billion in revenues. It's going to be interesting to see how the market responds to something that it might be the Magnificent Eight soon, I suppose. But I don't know. For us, we feel that, yes, there's a lot of momentum in this stuff, but we're not willing to buy them or chase them. And, you know, sometimes it costs a bit of performance. We had a very strong first quarter that we outperformed the market very strongly by about 9 or 10%. And this quarter, we're lagging about 3% behind the index because we've been basically buying protection the whole time. And the market hasn't yet come down. It looks like, hey, we've had two red sessions in a row on the NASDAQ now, so maybe this is it. But essentially, we're sitting with a lot of cash, and we're sitting in a very defensive position because we feel that the market's just run really, really, really hard recently. And we want to protect the money rather than to, you know, just follow the herd. There are opportunities out there that we think are lower risk, essentially. Now, you know, it is a difficult thing to say because you look at the stuff running up the page and you think, well, you know, you missed the bus. Of course, you're going to find negative things to say about them. The problem that we have with the market at the moment is that the only things that are running are the Magnificent Seven. Market breadth is very, very narrow.
Yeah,
a very small number of companies have a huge impact on the index, and the index is up, but the rest of the market is really not. And that is a worrying sign for us, which is why we're in a defensive posture. So Magnificent Seven, they're magnificent. If you've owned them, congratulations. You've made a lot of money. Our view is that we wouldn't go out and buy them today. We would rather buy software counters. We would rather buy K-Web, which is like Chinese tech, for example. Yep. That would be what we would be backing. But they could go another 20, 30% before it's over, right? So our investment philosophy is just not to chase what's hot and trending.
And the market is hot and trending. I'm looking at the S&P. 9 green weeks, up 1,100 points, call it 15% since that low in late March. It has been, this is a hot, hot market. We'll leave it there. Peter Redden, Hayes, Serenia Capital Advisors. Appreciate the early morning time. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Joining us, Vishal Rama, quantitative analyst at Prescient Investment Management. Vishal, appreciate the early morning time. We've got an MPC meeting today, announcement 3 p.m. this afternoon. Consensus is on a 0.25% rate hike. Are you in the consensus camp? Do you think that the MPC is going to increase our rates this afternoon?
Morning, Simon. Yeah, thanks for having me. So indeed, we do think that the MPC will hike rates at today's meeting. The consensus is that way. I think the SOBL wants to sort of be the MPC would maybe want to be a little bit preemptive in terms of making their move, given that, I mean, second round effects are not yet showing in the data with regards to inflation, but they'd want to be preemptive in that it looks like, given that the war has gone on for so long, that the second round effects will start to show and, you know, be ahead of the curve and try to sort of hike rates now, and then maybe they can see how they don't have to be as aggressive going forward. So I think they do a hike at today's meeting.
It's a fair point. And I take your point around the second round effects and some of those. I mean, I think, for example, food, and I've had this conversation before with others, you know, the wheat that's been planted now with higher fertilizer cost, we're only going to be eating in 6 months' time, and we're going to see the price pressure then. If they rise today, I mean, is this going to be potentially and I appreciate that there's a lot of unknowns out there, but is this looking like a single one-off sort of shot across the bow, or maybe a two or three series of increases? Because of course this is very much a supply shock driven inflation rather than demand driven.
100% right. So definitely on this more supply side than demand side. Look, we think at this point in time it'll be one-off at this point in time, not see further additional hikes down the line. I think, you know, if we get some sort of a resolution very quickly from the whole, I mean, it's obviously because it says one day it will be solved, next day not.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but if we get something fairly quickly sort of on that side, then I think there's no reason why inflation can't sort of come back. And, you know, at the last point is at 4%. If that can come now, sort of stabilize around 4%, then come down lower over time, there's no reason why the stock needs to be as aggressive. You know, the rest of the world has also not gone down that route. You know, we see with the Fed, initially at the start of the year, they're looking at cuts, but now that's sort of, the curve is sort of flat and higher for longer, not necessarily hiking, but so I think the stock don't need to necessarily be aggressive and can just hike for once and then see how the data comes through after that. And then if they need to cut to hike further on, they can do that. But we think that there'll be one hike and then we will wait and see. And but most likely that will be one, and then it'll be higher for longer for a while, and then maybe cutting a bit later. But yeah, that's probably only next year.
I take your point, because inflation can unwind quite quickly. I mean, you know, we're looking at, I think, a diesel price that's potentially down around 5 Rand next week. Of course, they'll still be getting the benefit of the Treasury. So I think it's 3 Rand 93 benefit there. But this inflation could unwind fairly quickly if we see oil prices down and therefore fuel prices down, notwithstanding some of that lag effect.
For sure, right? I mean, our view is that this whole shock right now, as it stands, is quite a temporary one, right? It's not going to persist for long. We say temporary because, you know, if we look at the data, and obviously we are systematic analysts, and we look at the data very closely and apply it into our models, you know, if you look at the data, the one-year inflation number has ticked higher. But if you look at the longer-term stuff, like the 5 and 10 year, that have ticked up higher, but not as aggressively. And so what we think is the market is saying is that, well, it's expecting more of a short-term thing than a long-term thing from inflation. However, that does definitely change if we see inflation sort of stay higher. Also, if we see the war continue for longer, then that inflation numbers will start to tick higher, and then it moves away from this temporary thing to a more persistent thing, and then we have different problems, right?
Yeah, 100%. And how much is this because of the new target? And to be clear, I was definitely in favor of the new 3% target, which is with 1% band either way. But if we were in the old target, and the minister, and the governor rather always targeting 4.5, we might be in a slightly different, well, a fundamentally different position with inflation only at 4. They might not be cutting. This really is part of the new regime.
Yeah, you'd have to say so. So supposedly, yeah, we're obviously on the whole side that this new inflation ban is really a good thing for our economy in the long term. I do think that, you know, as you rightly mentioned, right, it's just where we see inflation tick up higher now and shifting out those bands, it does mean that, you know, the SARB need to be on their toes a bit more. And, you know, they want to maintain their credibility around this inflation ban that they've created. You know, we don't want to be seeing this number shoot out higher, and then they go out of their band and then they lose their credibility. So I think it's definitely a case of this new ban maybe just forcing the hand a little bit more, and they in a sense will then be a bit more preemptive and will look to like to sort of maintain that credibility going forward.
Well, Vishal Rama, Prescient Investment Management. Rate decision at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Vishal, appreciate the early morning time. I polled today on LinkedIn. What do you think we're going to get? Are we going to get that hike? Is he perhaps going to leave it unchanged? I think we're going to get the hike. I don't like it. I wish we weren't, but I think that's what we will get. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation beating returns. Let your money keep working with Stanlib Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Amor Berger-Smit, Director and Head of Regulatory at Worksmen's Attorneys. Amor, appreciate the time. Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition has published revised merger notification thresholds, also filing fees. This falls under the Competition Act 89 of 1989. Let's first talk around the thresholds. What are the thresholds? What's the change, and are they significant?
Well, Simon, and thank you for having me. And this is an important topic to discuss if we think about any deal-making process. So what we've seen, there are intermediate thresholds and then large merger thresholds. And this actually determines whether you need to knock on the door of the competition authority to get approval for your M&A transaction or, you know, your acquisition. And that becomes a very important threshold. So for quite a while, there's been criticism that, you know, the merger file the threshold fees were too low and it actually caught too many transactions. So we've now suddenly seen on an intermediate level, the thresholds, if we look at the combined turnover or asset value of the two entities that will come together, that's moved up from 600 million to 1 billion.
Oh, wow.
And then you always also look at what is the turnover or the asset value of the target firm that you want to acquire or then combine with. And that's been doubled from 100 million to 200 million. So we've seen on the intermediate level quite significant increases in filing fees of over 60%, closer to 70%. We're on the higher threshold, if we talk about large mergers that has to go through to the competition tribunal, those increases have been lower, around about 45%. And that will mean that, you know, both the commission's workload will be less in future, as well as that of the tribunal. So we now on a tribunal level look at a 9.5 billion combined asset value before you have to knock on the door of the competition tribunal.
These are significant changes. I mean, I suppose, I mean, in some senses, it's maybe just sort of catching up with sort of, I was going to say, fiscal drag, that's on our tax, but in the sense of, you know, inflation's been going along, but this will, I mean, it will make mergers, it'll make acquisitions, particularly of the smaller size, just that much easier, just that it's a process, you don't need to go to the authorities to get it approved.
That's correct, but we need to remind ourselves that the commission has always got the ability to write and say, but, you know, we note this transaction is taking place and we require you to notify that as what they refer to in the legislation, a small merger. So it's not as if all transactions that fall below these thresholds are now, you know, land for the free and we can do whatever we want to. And the commission can still keep an eye over what's happening in the rest of the economy. I think what we also need to realize in this process, and we seem to see it more and more with government departments, you know, if we think about Home Affairs, Enrica charging a fee for those checks on the based from a Home Affairs perspective, the new CPA, direct marketing regulations, expecting companies to pay a fee. Yes, well, the filing fees, those notification fees to the commission has also gone up quite a bit. So their ability to generate, can we be blunt and say, income through filing fees have also been enhanced through this process.
I hadn't actually thought of that, of course. I mean, it is a revenue for them, let's be clear. And I mean, the merger filing fees, what, 165 to 220,000. The large merger filing fees from 550 to 735,000. I mean, in the bigger picture, maybe not massive, but not insignificant at all. And this really is on more, this is, if we look at more broadly, this is government kind of trying to make it sort of easing regulatory complexity, make it easier for businesses to do business and cases to do mergers and acquisitions.
Yeah, I think this is part and parcel of that argument as well, to, you know, lessen the hurdles for business and make it easier for business. And for this economy needs growth. So we also need to look at it from that perspective and those hurdles to lessen that. But more importantly, Simon, there's been a lot of criticism against the competition authorities with, you know, lag in time and not being responsive enough in terms of approval of transactions and getting that with the necessary speed through the system. But that is also partly due to the fact that there's not infinite resources and they had a massive, massive workload to deal with. So one would hope through this process that one can speed up approval processes and actually in that way enhance deal-making and enhance the growth of the economy, because the workload on the commission side will definitely diminish as a result of these threshold increases.
I hadn't thought of that. And of course, in some fees, they can get some extra staff. But I remember the Afrimat merger of takeover of Lafarge took an age and it actually hurt the ultimate economics of it. Is this, when is this live? Is this happened? Is this to happen? What are the timelines in this regard?
Well, the irony of this is it's already happened.
Oh,
so
wow.
By the time it wasn't, when it was announced to all of us on the 11th of May, it came into effect on the 1st of May, which is makes for interesting reading, Simon, because now some transactions will actually fall outside of the net and other might actually require a higher fee to be paid before it's assessed.
Oh, that is interesting. A quick thought there. If I sort of, you know, tied the knot back in April, there's different complexities to May and it's not going to be retroactive.
Yeah, that is very interesting because, you know, this is a factor that you need to take cognizance of if you, in your deal planning and your, you know, whole process and strategy. So, yeah, that has changed the field that we're looking at.
But broadly, this is good news. I like it. I think it's a good move forward. We'll leave it there. I'm Amor Berger-Smit, Director and Head of Regulatory, Workmen's Attorneys. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We're chatting with Zimeli Mbandwe yesterday. He's from FNB Wealth and Investments. We were talking Pepkor numbers. Very strong fintech, maybe modest clothing sales. We asked your take on the stock. Over half said a great business. A quarter said could be better. And the rest saying, yeah, core ops is seeming to struggle. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobukle, Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. It's Crypto Capital.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.